haven't seen you in forever. We start talking about the good.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with LA-based veteran jazz drummer, vocalist, songwriter, and educator Dave Toll. We had a great interview about his long life in music, COVID, recordings, and his inclusion in a new jazz songbook series, Collection Number 2, by Chuck Scherr. Dave has been on a great many adventures in his life, like being the drummer for Barbra Streisand and being featured as a musician on the Fox TV show Family Guy. Enjoy his stories.
Hey, Dave, Joe Domino, Neon Jazz Radio in Kansas City.
How are you?
I'm good, man. What's going on?
Think you're good. Well, I'm up and I'm awake now, which is great.
It's half the battle, isn't it? Realistically.
Yeah, well, it's so funny. Some mornings I'm up early and some mornings I sleep in a little bit, and I woke up and I saw your message and I was like, okay, well, that's in 5 minutes, but I could probably make this happen.
All right, that's cool. That's like jazz, man. It's improv. You just got to
hop
into
it. I wasn't going to spend a bunch of time rehearsing, you know.
yeah, right. Exactly. Well, hey, Dave, thanks for taking a minute out. When Chuck reached out to me, it sounds like a very interesting venture with a lot of very interesting musicians, so I'm glad we're kicking this off. You're the first musician on the bill to talk to, so thanks for taking a minute out.
Well, it's great. It's no problem, and I'm glad to have a chance to share some of my stuff that I'm doing with your listeners, and what better opportunity than this?
So let's start at the top here. Based on what Chuck sent over to me, talk to me a little bit about this songbook series collection that you're involved with him.
Well, Chuck has done, I guess, two of these. This is the second one. He tries to, you know, if you know his company, I mean, he's always kept the highest level of excellence in all the songs and different things that he's put out over the years. And I think he felt like there were artists that really were underrepresented in terms of having their songs published and available in print form. And so he has made it kind of a crusade to reach out to people. And so he's known my music over the years, and he and I have talked several times. And so I was really pleased when he asked me to be part of this second round. It says something about how hard it is for players to get a prominent publisher to release music of theirs, even if they're well known, because if you look at the names on the list, even of this series, they're not people who are, I mean, there's some well known people on the list. And so you've got Randy Brecker and Denny Zeitlin and Annie Norell and Benny Golson, for Christ's sake. It says something about how important a something like what Chuck is doing is, because otherwise it's really hard for artists, even prominent artists, to get their material out into the world in a print form. Now, here we are with this series getting put out, and I'm really excited to have my material put in. I write my tunes slowly over the course of long periods of time, but I finally have two CDs worth of stuff that I've put out, and I was really pleased to hear from Chuck to invite me to be part of it.
So I guess that's the other part of this. What's the most recent release that you have out?
My most recent release is my second CD, which is called Texting and Driving. And it was released in early 2018, so it's just about
right
4 years. Yeah, and then the one before that was 2009. That was I Just Want to Get Paid. I'm a little different than a lot of artists because for me, the purpose of putting out a recording is to release songs that I've written. So all of my CDs just have my original tunes on them, which is unusual. So I have to wait until I've written another 10 songs, you know, before I'm ready to put something else out.
Absolutely. So I guess with being a part of this series now, we've just gone through COVID, we're coming out of it. Is this a pretty welcome time to have a new project out on the horizon to kind of kick back the clouds and watch the world open up a little bit?
I think so. Not that there would be a bad time. It helps me because the fact that we're not locked down is helpful because I'm able to make mention of the book series when I'm doing concerts and gigs. So, and I timed it knowing the thing was coming out. I was able to time it with a show that I'm doing up in Oakland on May 13th at the place called The Sound Room there in Oakland, which is a very nice jazz room up there. So I was able to make that gig kind of a celebration of the release of the book. So it's nice that we're not all sitting in our homes not doing anything, the fact that we're out and about. And like you said, it does give you a sense of, hey, we're bursting out, so here's this new thing. It's hard to know how people are going to receive a written chart series, you know. Certainly, I think people are, maybe it would have been better during the lockdown because people were sitting at home and they would have time to just sit at their piano and work on these tunes. I'm glad to have it happen anytime, and certainly I'm glad to be out and gigging so that I can make mention of it in live situations to people. That's terrific.
Let's talk about how all of this began for you. How did the jazz journey begin?
Well, I'm not gonna spend an hour making you listen to every detail. I was born in a small shack. No, I grew up in Berkeley, California. And I'm a product of the great jazz program at Berkeley High School, which is still turning out lots and lots of great players, even 40 years later. I graduated there in 1981. The other prominent player that I played with all through high school, who was there at the exact same time as pianist Benny Green. Benny and I were the drums and piano for the trio at the high school the whole time I was there. I left Berkeley, went to Cal State Northridge in Los Angeles, got my degree in percussion. In the late 80s, I was out with Maynard Ferguson for a couple of years and did a couple of records with him. I settled in Los Angeles and have just been here all this time, gigging and working and doing sessions and playing a lot of jazz. I spent 10 years with Chuck Mangione from 2000 to 2010. And on that gig was the first one where I was playing drums and also I was the lead vocalist, so I was singing all of Chuck's tunes from the drums. At that time, I started going, hey, you know, I can actually really sing from the drums. This actually works. Then just a ton of other stuff over the years as time goes by. And then in 2016, I started being the drummer and touring with Barbra Streisand. I did a tour with her in 2016, and we played a few things. The last thing she did was 2019. And, of course, nobody knows if she's going to tour again because she's getting a little bit older and she keeps claiming she's never going to. But in any case, we have had lots of great shows. They're all, you know, big venues like Madison Square Garden and that kind of thing. So was doing that. And then meanwhile, somewhere around 2000, I started writing tunes of my own and having the courage to bring them to gigs and sit in and sing them. And 2007, I thought, gee, I got enough of these tunes, I'll make a record. And so I put together the resources to make the I Just Want to Get Paid album. And, you know, my tunes are a mixture. Some of them are funny. You know, they're humorous, kind of Dave Frischbergian pokes at the world. So that brings a lot of appeal to people who are wary of original tunes. People aren't so sure about original jazz tunes, you know. But if there's humor in it, then they'll check it out, you know. And once you've hooked them with some humor, then you can bring some other songs to the table that are more just normal songs. Maybe they're about love or, you know, the kinds of things people write about. So I just keep writing tunes as I go, and I put out Texting and Driving in 2018. And, you know, along the way, just tons of gigs and playing jazz with all kinds of people. Some on the road and some here in L.A. like that. It's just been a sort of a continuous scratch and claw to keep everything happening.
Of all of these musicians that you've been around, I mean, you've talked about Barbra and Maynard and all these others. You know, we had this long absence of no live music. Is there a particular show or a moment or moments that happened over that time that stick out to you that were magical?
Well, yeah. I mean, more than you can... I mean, I could use an hour just coming up with amazing memories from all of those situations. The one thing we haven't gotten back to as the COVID thing squirrels its way through whatever the next chapter is at least I have not gotten back to being on the road with anybody. So, you know, I'm waiting for that one to come around where I can start getting the calls that I used to get to go travel or do a gig in New York with somebody or whatever. Yeah, I mean, like thinking about Barbra Streisand, in 2019... we played Hyde Park in London, an outdoor concert for their Summerfest thing. There were 65,000 people there. And we got up on the stage, and you just looked out at this ocean of humanity. I mean, I've played Hollywood Bowl with Chuck Mangione, and I've played, you know, large venues and jazz festivals and things. And so you know what it looks like when there's a lot of people out in front of you. It's always kind of exciting. But this was 65,000 people, and We have photographs from the stage. It's pretty amazing, you know, and they're all standing up. Nobody was sitting down, so it was just this ocean of heads. And that was an incredible concert. It was a perfect afternoon. late afternoon, then, you know, thing, and Barbara was in great form, and we had such a good time that afternoon. Thinking about Chuck, I mean, I did so many gigs with him because I was with him for 10 years. I will always remember doing, we used to do half the time small group things where it was Jerry Nywood and Chuck and me, and it would be either Coleman Mellett or Grant Geisman, and Kevin Axe was playing bass, and we had a keyboard player, Corey Allen, so that was the size of the band. And then sometimes we would do Pops Orchestra gigs where it was that same group, but we would be surrounded by an orchestra in the city. And it was always one of my favorite things to do because I just loved being surrounded by the strings. Chuck's writing was so fun, and his orchestrations were so fun to hear. We played one time with him at Lincoln Center in New York with a full orchestra made up of New York studio players. So it was a great orchestra. And I was singing. When we would do the pop orchestra things, it was actually more singing for me than usual. And he has a couple of ballads that I don't even play drums on them, but I would just sing, and he's conducting the strings. And I'm telling you, to be sitting there singing at Lincoln Center surrounded by a professional orchestra, that's a moment that you print.
Yeah. Sure.
And, you know, I mean, all you got to do is just keep searching around. You can find so many great memories and so many incredible things. I'm just so glad to have been able to just jump from thing to thing. I did. I used to work with Jack Sheldon for about more than 20 years when he wasn't touring, but he was here in L.A. And I can't go through a day without coming up with some silly thing that Jack used to say. I don't know if you know about Jack, but he was very, very funny, and he was a brilliant trumpet player. He was very politically incorrect, but extremely humorous. And we used to have a lot of fun doing his gigs. And so you just, yeah, if I sit down and start reflecting on stuff I've done, you know, and of course then all the stuff leading my own group over the years, and most of that's been in Los Angeles, but I've managed to get the group out every once in a while, get an offer to play someplace more far flung. One of my favorite ones, I was just thinking about it, was in Rochester. One of the guitarists who used to play with Chuck Mangione had a Friday, Saturday night at the Strathallan Hotel, which is a sort of a famous jazz haunt in Rochester. And he said, look, man, why don't you come up and I can get you a room and you can do two nights doing your own tunes. And so I did it two different years, and it was all the great faculty members from the Eastman School were the players. And, you know, we didn't rehearse. We just sat down and they sight-read my tunes, and I sang all night, and there was a good crowd, and two nights of playing great jazz with great musicians. You just can't get better than that.
Let me ask you this. You've been at this for a long, long time, in all kinds of different incarnations. And I'm curious, what's been the key to longevity? You loving doing what you've been doing for all this time?
Well, what you just said is the first thing. I mean, you have to just adore it. You have to want to do it so bad. When you have a gig like the ones we were just talking about, those are the moments where it just flows like water and it's easy. And you just think, wow, if it could just be like this all the time, you know. I just did a gig a week ago tonight. I did a gig here in L.A. with the great organist from Columbus, Ohio, Tony Monaco. And Tony came out to L.A. and we did a B3 organ trio with me and Tony and Grant Geisman, who used to play with Chuck. And, you know, when you have a gig like that, you have a wonderful night, and it's just, you just think, oh, gosh, this is, if it could always just be like this and I could just cruise. But the thing that makes it's possible for you to stick with it is that you love it so much that when it really is a drag for one reason or another, or there's a lull, or you have a bad experience of some sort with some artist or some situation, you get slapped in the face, and it happens often enough. Even after all these years, there are situations that aren't so great. And you still get in the car and you drive home and think, well, you know, I'm glad to be in the game. I'm glad to be playing. You know, it wasn't my favorite night of playing tonight, but I still loved it. I still, you know, I'm still eager to play tomorrow. That's the key, I think. And then along with that is just putting in the time and energy to make sure that what you're putting out is at the highest, highest level. You know, it just has to be 100%, or, well, you never get to 100. It has to be 99%. If you're going to try to convince people that what you're doing is something that they should pay attention to, the worst thing you can do is have it be sort of half-baked. I know for myself anyway, whether it's playing the drums or if it's singing or if I'm working on a tune, I'll take as long as I need to and I'll put in the time. Because when I get in front of the audience, I want it to be 100% if I could. That keeps you focused. You know, all the time you put in behind the scenes, practicing and everything. You have to love it so much. You just have to love it so much.
Everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but you live your life. Who do you think you are?
Oh, I think I'm a kid who never grew up. That's what I think. Although I grew up because I do all the stuff that I was just saying in the last answer.
Yeah.
But at the heart of it, though, you know, I feel like I'm the same person I was when I was 10. I've always loved each new day, and I've always thought the world was a place full of humor and silliness, and I think my family would agree that that's the way I approach the world. And it has, and you know, I've always said when it comes to music, and especially jazz, that people play their personalities and people write their personalities, whether they mean to or not. If somebody's kind of a dark and brooding person, you're going to hear that in their playing. My writing and my playing has always been, I've always reached out into the room in the most gregarious way that I could. And that just is what makes sense to me, because that's who I am. So I guess I would describe myself as a almost 60-year-old, 10-year-old, having a great time and just trying to make as many opportunities as I can to play my music and play with other great musicians and have a good time. Hopefully my family would describe me as a pretty good dad as well. But
I like it. Dave, man, hey, thank you for opening up, giving me a little window into your world and talking about the Jazz Songbook Series Collection 2. Let everybody know where they can get involved with the new collection and anything related to your music and performances, anything you got coming up.
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, I know that your crowd is in, I suppose if you're broadcasting, but you're probably like everybody else on the internet, you probably have listeners all over the place, I would think. But I'll be leading my group in Oakland on the 13th of May. That's a week from Friday at the Sound Room. And if anybody that's listening knows anybody in the Bay Area, tell them to go over there, because the last thing I want to do is book the gig and then get there and have nobody show up. A couple of other things coming up, some things in L.A. I've got a nice gig in, there's a new club in Paso Robles, California, that's called Libretto, and I'm leading my trio there on June 18th. But, you know, the thing that people can do for getting familiar with my music is go to my YouTube channel. If they just search Dave Tull on YouTube, you can find it. And I've been posting a lot of video recently. I did a whole series of 12 of my tunes. We did video for the Vail Jazz organization, the people who do the Vail Jazz Party. And I've played for them a few times over the years, but they called me during the pandemic and said, well, listen, we're doing this series where if we can get you into a studio, we'll record 12 of your tunes and then we'll post them one at a time online. And it was a great opportunity to get some really high quality video of my tunes, which I hadn't really had too much good examples of. So if anybody's interested in knowing more about my stuff, you can look it up, because I've posted a whole mess of those videos, and also ones from a concert that I did in Laguna at the Festival of the Arts last August. And of course, I would urge people to search up I Just Want to Get Paid and Texting and Driving and give some of my tunes a listen. It's sort of hard. You know, we're chatting about things. It's always funny to talk about music and not actually listen to any of it in the moment. But my songs are fun, and they are jazz, but they're original, and a lot of them are humorous. And so I hope that will inspire some people to look me up and check out the stuff.
Dave, hey, man, thank you for taking a minute out today. Good luck with everything as we move forward. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy chatting with the other people in the series as the days go by, because they're all terrific.
Absolutely.
Musicians.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Los Angeles, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Dave for his time, music, and stories. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. And finally, for everything Joe Domino related, go to JoeDomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can kick in a few bucks to the Neon Jazz cause. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.